are listening to Off Planet Radio at offplanetradio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Off Planet Radio. Randy Moggins is with me. And before we get started, I just wanted to give you guys an update on last week's show. I hope you all saw the show with Sean Gautreaux. And we just wanted to tell you guys sort of some of the high strangeness we experienced while trying to put that show out. The show was supposed to have aired the week before it did. And all three of us, Randy, Sean, and I, experienced some very strange things during right after the show, we recorded the show. The 24 to 72 hours after that was crazy. And we had a run-in with Zeus. Sean was almost struck by lightning, hit about 50 feet from him, and fried his computer hard drive, and he was offline for a couple of days. Randy, when trying to render the video, every single time he tried, his computer would overheat, and he ended up having to do it in very, very small chunks that resulted in some random things showing up in the show, including music that we don't know where it came from. Exactly the artist that we were putting on, so we went with that. And then I had a very strange run-in with a dupe of Tesla. So, let's put it that way. I had a very strange magnetic pull towards a Tesla vehicle that was... If you recall, these were all topics that sort of were touched on, lightning, Tesla, and fried computer hard drives in the episode. So it's funny if y'all had that synchronicity afterwards. But we were glad to get the show out, and we hope you enjoyed it. We had fun doing it.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that once we got to, the original plan was we were going to put the show up on YouTube, and then obviously the next week, Conscious Consumer Network would pick the show up for the lifetime time slot. And when we got to Friday night, and I had spent two evenings rendering this video, which is normally, it's somewhat time consuming, but it's not a big deal. You got to understand, I have a production computer designed to do video production. It's a $2,000 computer. That computer was so hot, I could have set this coffee mug on that computer and it would have warmed my coffee, and it did it four times no matter what we did to what we dumped in the mix. And after I streamlined the process a little bit, the computer was fine. The computer has not overheated since. There was nothing extraordinary about the show in terms of production. We simply hit, I guess what our guest tonight maybe can help us sort through some of this. We were in some kind of weird vortex thing. My guides were telling me, do not put this show out until after the full moon solstice period. There was so much interference. There was so much conflict and chaos that was going on in the background. And this all spilled over until last Monday. Last Monday was like the day when it all dumped. There was massive blow-ups and collisions, and then peace settled again into the valley. So we'll try and sort through all of this as we go, but it's synchronicities and it's collisions in the cosmosphere, all kinds of interesting shit, just because, hey, it's Off Planet TV.
Of course. All right, so let's get on with tonight's show. So for those of us who spend our time swimming in the sea of alternative media, there are a variety of reasons why we may begin to follow somebody's work. Maybe they're an amazing researcher, or they have an unusual skill or set of knowledge, or maybe they just have a really unique lens that they view information through that provides a perspective that resonates really deeply with you. Our guest tonight hits on all three of those criteria for me. He has been at the cutting edge of astrology and alternative research since his blog debuted in the summer of 2008, using a model that is based on the Western mundane system. He has found keys to decode charts and events in ways that resemble a multidimensional perspective. His style of interpretation led to 23 shows on Gaiam TV. His 11th house programs are some of the most viewed on the network. He is a regular guest on Regina Meredith's Open Mind series. On the Radio Tip, Robert has been producing and hosting live streaming radio broadcasts since 2010, exploring astrology, radical truth, quantum healing, and spiritual purpose with a variety of guests such as Jay Widener, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Freeman Fly, and others. His 11th House radio show broadcasts into the inner realms of outer space every Sunday at 10 p.m. Central, and the Friday Farcast beams every Friday at noon. He has worked with well over 1,000 clients since 2008 in one-on-one settings, providing unique, insightful, and empowering perspectives based on the natal chart. From business to career to home, family, and relationships, the reading process has proven to be a powerful and healing experience, unlocking potential and revealing purpose. He also teaches and gives live presentations both on the web and in person. I've had the pleasure of getting to know him over the last couple of years, and we've had incredible conversations. I got to spend some time with him earlier this year, and I'm glad to call him a friend. Robert Phoenix, welcome to Off Planet Radio.
Hey, that was awesome, Emily. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome, Robert. It's good to get to see you, talk to you.
So I thought maybe we'll just start with letting you sort of give a brief overview of astrology, the way that you use it, how it can help people in their lives, and let people also know what kind of services and courses you offer, and then we'll get on with the weird stuff.
Yeah, but before I get into that, after hearing about last week's show, great-looking women, lots of money, and optimal health. How's that sound? Because if we're going to get into the astro sync or the synchromistic realm, let's go into those topics. So in terms of my life, I got into this way back when I was in my 20s, and I started to get into systems. I was really into systems in the 20s. I've come through a period of my life where I'd had kind of a radical spiritual awakening, went through kind of a dark night of the soul. For lack of a better term, I had a conversion experience and was, for all intents and purposes, saved. And so you ask yourself, well, how does a guy that's saved become an astrologer, which is kind of an unusual path? But it happened. And during that period, from around 21 to about 24, I had a lot of kind of mind-blowing out-of-body experiences, telepathy. I saw auras. My life changed dramatically after I came out of this dark night of the soul where I was really kind of on my knees looking for help. And it was a really powerful time. So, I wanted to learn more. The phenomena was really interesting and intense, but I had a real desire and craving for knowledge. So I got into systems and I studied the runes. I studied tarot. I studied astrology. Anything I could get my hands on in my 20s, I was into. And I put astrology on the back burner for a while. And then back in my early 30s, tarot popped up and I became a phone psychic. And I did a lot of really interesting phone readings during that time with a legit service. And it was a really powerful experience. I was able to almost remote view whoever it was that I was talking with. I could describe, what their husband looked like, where they lived. And it was time and time and time again, astrologically, I had Uranus and Neptune transiting through my second house. So if you know anything about astrology, second house is your money. It's how you acquire your money. So I was doing Uranus, which is unusual, and Neptune, which was kind of mystical and psychic. So that sort of launched me kind of out into this realm in my mid-30s. And then I became a tarot reader, and I had clients all over the country. And then that went away in the late 90s. I got on the dot-com train. And I had a background in music. I did a lot of interviews with, fairly famous musicians, and that was my world. So I did dot-com for about 5 years. And when that was over, I didn't really know what to do. I was a dad. I was staying at home. And I had this blog, and I was like, I'm not really doing anything with this blog. I did a little of this, a little of that. And then in 2008, I did a post on Sarah Palin after she entered the race with John McCain. So I decided to look at Sarah Palin's chart. And I put that on my website, and my hits went through the roof. And I was picked up by a woman who was a very popular blogger at that time. Her name is Elsa Elsa. And everybody went to Elsa because Elsa had everybody else's blog. So if you got on Elsa's blog, there was a great chance you were going to get hundreds and hundreds of eyeballs looking at your blog. So that's where it started for me. And so I had this post and it just went through the roof. And I thought, well, let me do some more astrology. So my next post was about Joan Quigley, who was the astrologer for the Reagans back in the 80s, right? And I actually met Joan Quigley when I was a journalist back in the 80s. And we did a story on her, a very strange lady. She's related to Carol Quigley, who wrote one of the first...
Tragedy and Hope.
That's Tragedy and Hope, yeah. He's Bill Clinton's mentor.
Yep. So Joan was related to Carol. I think she's his sister. So there's that insider Washington connection. Interesting stuff. So I wrote about Joan Quigley. I wrote about Obama. And who was Obama? I looked at his chart, which was very early on. And that post on Obama, to this day, I think is one of my best posts from kind of an archetypal sort of expression. And then it just took off. I just kept doing more and more and more. And then, you know, in October, so I started right around September. In October, the economy just, you know, goes into the crapper. And I'm looking around astrologically, I'm like, what is going on here? Excuse me. And I saw the ingress of, you know, we're in the final degrees of Pluto and Sagittarius. So when we get into those final degrees of a sign, everything becomes sort of radical. The energy is all over the place. Because when you start at the first degrees of the sign, it's really together, it's whole, it's cohesive. You get to the end, it's fluorescing, it's all over the place. And what's coming next? It's Pluto and Capricorn. And I saw Pluto and Capricorn. I said, oh, we're in for deep shit. Because this is where the Plutocrats are going to try control. This is their moment in the sun. Yeah. So then I did a series of posts called The Melting Economy. And I was looking at, you know, what was going to happen with the economy and forecasting trends out from Pluto and Capricorn. And a lot of the stuff that I talked about has actually come to fruition from that time period. And then people started to ask me about readings and do I do them? And that's where it all took off. And it sort of grabbed me. And it's been a process of evolution along the way with the radio show and trying to find my kind of niche in that world. And I'm just launching, after all these years, I'm launching a teaching series. In fact, it launches tomorrow, 16 hours of video downloadable with PDFs and labs and lectures. So, you know, after all this time, you know, starting to come together, 7 years later, thousands of people that I've done readings for, the slot on Viome, internet radio. Hopefully, this is kind of a time where, you know, my content is coalescing and, it, you know, can be a real, not just me, but astrology can be a real map for our times. I'm convinced. I've seen it over and over and over again. And if we understand it from the Western perspective, it can provide a lot of clues and synchronicity for where we are, potentially where we're headed.
Well, cool. All right. So I know one of the things that, since we're talking about politics and the economy and all of that, let's get right into Brexit. What do you think is going on here?
Well, you know, we have been in this grand, mutable cross. We've had Jupiter in Virgo. We've had Saturn in Sagittarius. We've had Neptune in Pisces and a variety of planets in Gemini, whether it's Sun, Venus, or Mercury. And Brexit happened in that grand mutable cross. We get into mutable energy. That means change. You know, we're dealing with kind of these radical elements of change. And we also have Pluto in Capricorn and Uranus in Aries, and those are in cardinal signs, which are catalytic. So you have catalytic and mutable. And it's a really interesting combination. And when Brexit happened, the moon was in Aquarius. So there was two opportunities for Brexit to kind of, you know, kind of evolve itself. One was a trine with Mercury and Gemini, which would mean a split, right? You know, that's what Gemini represents,
right? Kind of
zygotic split. And then, or it could have moved into that sextile with Saturn in Sagittarius, which would have been kind of the older order. So there, it was in play at that time. And, you know, I heard that they used paper ballots for Brexit, which made it, you know, I think pretty clear in terms of how they were going to record the votes. And personally, I think that the vote was probably a lot bigger than it was.
Yeah.
They went to that 52-48, which seems to be kind of a ratio that they go to when they want to make it look close. What was really interesting about the vote is that it took place, I think it was a day after 0 degrees Cancer. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Sabian symbols, but the Sabian symbols were developed by Mark Edmund Jones and Elsie Wheeler back in the 1930s. And Mark Edmund Jones is one of the first kind of evolutionary astrologers. He took astrology out of the realm of fate and fortune. And he and Dane Rudyard were really, you know, very important in terms of doing that. And Elsie Wheeler was a trance medium. And what she did is she was able to take a symbol in her head for every degree of the zodiac, 365 degrees of the zodiac, and they were able to essentially create this sort of mandala of meaning and symbolism. Now, what was really interesting is that for 0 degrees Cancer, the Sabian symbol is, sailors at sea, sailors on a ship at sea, lower one flag and raise another. So this was the day before Brexit, right?
Yeah.
So the Sabian symbol for that was kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that symbol really comes from what happened during the Bolshevik Revolution, because that's what happened. The sailors were the ones that were very instrumental in helping, you know, kind of overthrow the Tsar. So they lowered one flag and they raised another flag. So here we had a revolution, but it's going backwards. It's going, you know, instead of going into the kind of Bolshevik socialist model, it's reverting back into the nation state. So I think between the mutable Grand Cross, that catalytic energy with Pluto in Capricorn and Uranus in Aries, and that Sabian symbol, you know, of 0 to 1 Cancer, I think that change was imminent. It was in the air.
Yeah, so I agree with you. What do you think about, you know, do you think maybe they saw this coming and that's why they went with the paper ballots and let it happen, and they're, you know, they sort of came up with some way that they're going to spin it into something that is what they want, since this probably seems like it would be what they wouldn't want, but they have a tendency to, you know, make lemonade out of lemons. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, so we have to try to understand what the nature and model of, you know, this version of reality is.
Right.
And, you know, one of the sort of semi-popular rumors that I actually think is true and has some credence is that reality, as we know it, is being run by a massive supercomputer, probably connected with CERN in Brussels, the beast, right?
No argument here.
So we've got a quantum computer.
Yep.
And the quantum computer probably is about as close to conscious as it gets, right? So this quantum computer is spitting out, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of parallel realities with iterations. You know, we talk about game theory. This is game theory on steroids.
Yeah.
So if that's true, then these guys that are plugging into that supercomputer, they're able to, you know, plug into something like Brexit and say, okay, we'll have a series of actions that will come out of this iteration of reality that will help us, you know, move our goal forward.
Right.
In order to do that, I think they're actually taking a bit of a step backwards, because we know what they were trying to do is they were trying to link up the TTIP with NAFTA and GATT and make this entire kind of global chain. And when London and England pull out of that sequence, the TTIP is a lot less likely to happen. So that's on hold right now, and I don't know what they have in their bag next. Maybe they're going to do a run on some currencies. Maybe they'll completely collapse the European Union, throw Europe into chaos, and out of chaos, of course, they have order.
Right.
So we'll see, but I think that there's energy here. And if we take the energy, that catalytic energy with the Grand Cross, immutable Grand Cross, Pluto and Capricorn, Uranus and Aries, energy is energy. Let's just go with this thing, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, regardless of what the machinations are behind the scene, the idea and the energy behind, we want to take our power back, That is what it is. So, yeah.
It is in the air, you know. Absolutely. And no matter what you think about Donald Trump, and, you know, Donald Trump, I trust Donald Trump about as high as I could pick him up off the ground. I mean, he's got Sun conjunct Uranus and Gemini. I mean, nobody should trust him. But the thing about Trump that's fascinating is he is completely deconstructed. He's taken a wrecking ball. The GOP and the entire political process, which is what somebody with Sun and Gemini conjunct Uranus and Gemini conjunct the true node, that's what you would think that they would do. I mean, Look at what happens.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I what I say to people about Trump is I don't usually like what he says, but I like that he says it.
I think, you know, and he's saying things that, you know, anybody that tells William Crystal, he says publicly that William Crystal is a phony and a loser.
I like.
You know, call out one of the neocon snakes.
Yeah.
You call him a phony. Now, people think that that's theater. I don't think it's theater. I really don't.
Whether it does or not, whether it is or it isn't, it's the truth. So I'm glad he said it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, you know, maybe Trump is really a lot smarter than we give him credit for, which that might be the case. Mm-hmm. You know, because he's checking off all the right boxes, you know, for the Zionists and the neocons. Won't recognize Palestine, right? You know, he thinks Palestine is connected to terror and radical Muslims. I mean, you know, it's a cookie cutter kind of, you know, mindset.
Right.
But maybe he's doing that just to come across as being, you know, a lover of the Star of David. And he gets in there. Who knows? Oh, with that, I mean, you just don't know with Trump.
You don't know.
Because on the surface, I don't agree with that position. But, you know.
Right. Yeah. And I agree with you. You know, I want to go back to what you just said. He takes a wrecking ball. Now, think about what Trump does. Trump is a builder, but he's also tearing down structures and rebuilding. I watched his career. I was in New York City when Trump was planning to build Trump Towers. And I know the political side of what Trump did. The art of the deal is really Trump's way of saying, I'll play the game any way it needs to be played. Because the story was that bags of money were found sitting on the desks of the key people who had to make decisions at City Hall in Manhattan. And that, let's just say that that was the message that was sent by Donald Trump to the people who were the power brokers in Manhattan when he wanted to build this thing. He wanted to build it, and damn it, he was going to build it. So you're dealing with somebody who's very tenacious here. And well, does that show up in his choice?
Bringing that back astrologically, let's get into it. His rising sign is Leo, and it's 29 degrees Leo, which makes it the anaretic degree, which is, you know, we were talking about how we get to the end of those degrees, right? Mm-hmm. 30 degrees in each sign. You get to that last degree, and there's really no juice left in the sign. You know, it's becoming dark. And then we have this new star that's born, which is the next sign. If you get that anaretic degree, you've got a commitment to whatever sign that's in. Leo is the sign of the king. Leo is the sign of royalty, right? Mm-hmm. Ego. So Trump is deep.
Lion of Judah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's deeply invested in that 29 years.
Yes.
And he's got Mars, I believe, at 26 degrees Leo, conjunct his ascendant. He's not somebody to be messed with. I mean, he is tenacious, fixed sign Leo. He has a lot of pride. But what's really interesting, Randy, is that once you get past that 29th degree, his whole first house is Virgo, which is about service and wanting to help.
Right?
And he's got three planets in Cancer. You know, I've looked at Trump's chart, and I've looked at Hillary's chart, and I put the United States chart up against both. Trump's chart aligns with the United States chart almost like it's in lockstep. Like they're almost like, you know, hovering around the same planetary atmosphere.
Like you could put the transparency right over one another.
You're right there. Hillary's chart is more like a seesaw chart, where the United States is over here and she's over here. Now, there are lines, there's trines between some of those planets, which means they're interconnecting. So she is connected. She is on the opposite side of the bulk of the astrology for this country, where Trump is on the same side as it.
Now, Robert, you're talking about the United States here. So I assume we're talking the natal chart for the country itself, the organic country, and the destiny of the country. Is it possible for an astrologer, for you, for instance, to look at that natal chart, at that line, and begin to discern astrologically where the United States is in their destiny? Many people seem to think we're at the end of the line here, or that we are simply at a conjunction, a juncture, where a key decision needs to be made by the people that's going to determine whether this country continues or, and prospers, or it fails.
Well, so to get into the United States chart, you know, we have to kind of understand, you know, when it happened and who was behind it. And the guy that was behind the United States chart was Ben Franklin. Mm-hmm. You know, total hellfire club.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, Illuminati, yeah. Double agents, right? Not mm-hmm. necessarily a great guy.
No, not at all.
I mean, so he's behind the chart, and he's really cagey because they wanted to sign it earlier. They wanted to sign it about 2 days earlier, but the moon was in Capricorn, and Franklin knew from an astrological point of view that that would not be a great moon for the country, right? That he wanted the moon to be in Aquarius, which is kind of radical in some ways, right? It gave the country this kind of, you know, sort of new age Aquarian. Mm-hmm. Utopian Atlantean, the home of Atlantis.
Yeah.
New Atlantis, the moon.
Francis Bacon, the new Atlantis. Yeah.
So he was going for this moon in Aquarius. Now, there seems to be a little bit of controversy about the rising sign of the country. I believe the rising sign of the country is Sagittarius. Some people believe it's Gemini and it's flipped. And I've got my own reasonings behind it, mainly because Sagittarius is an expansive sign. And that's what the country did. It expanded. It went, even though it's on the eastern horizon, it expanded. It went westward. And one of the key, creatures of that expansion was the horse. And Sagittarius is equine. So that works for me. And when we look at really specific and key transits right now, you know, the 12th house of the United States is Scorpio. And we've got Mars in Scorpio right now, retrograde in the 12th house of the United States. It already went through there earlier in the year. And I said that there was going to be an event that was going to take place with this Mars in Scorpio that was going to be a significant event for the country. And that event was the death of Antonin Scalia behind the scenes. And all this, you know, the skullduggery and all the dark stuff behind that, right?
Yeah.
And I looked at that very quickly, and I used the Sabian symbols very quickly to determine that not only was there foul play, but it was the same kind of foul play that Dick Cheney was involved in with the most dangerous game stuff.
Bingo, exactly.
And I put that out roughly 2 days. I'm not bragging, but this is the truth. I put that out 2 days after it all happened. And then everybody else came out with the Cheney stuff after that. So, but I saw that in the 12th house of the United States chart. Here we go again. Two major things have happened in the last week. Okay. On 9/11/2001, what that great day was, Saturn was in the sign of Gemini. The Twin Towers, right? Gemini, too. So here we are. We're an entire Saturn cycle, 14 years later, Saturn's in Sagittarius. And it's opposite where Saturn was in the U.S. chart at that time. So what happens? What happens? And I said this to Regina Meredith a couple of weeks ago. I said, hey, look, we are in the process of seeing maybe another 9/11 event because we're starting to talk about 9/11.
Yep.
Trump brought it up. There's Trump again. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about, hey, you know, 26 pages that were held back, I mean, the redacted pages. We're going to sue the Saudis. So now we're talking about 9/11. It's coming up. It's chatter. But I said there's a very good possibility we're going to see another 9/11 style event. What happens? You know, this theater in Orlando. That's what happens. So here we are, but, you know, the most people have died since, you know, 2001, 9/11, there it is. Saturn opposition. We see it in the chart. And guess what? There's that Mars retrograde one more time, gone backwards, 12th house U.S. chart, guns, violence. But who knows really what's going on there? What's behind the scenes in that event? Well, yeah, we can definitely look at the U.S. chart and plot whatever transits are happening around it. Saturn is right there. It's just in the 12th house. This is a major phase for the United States. Because this is a 30-year cycle. Saturn comes in 30-year cycles. So we'd have to go back 30 years the last time Saturn was in the U.S. 12th house. It is going to come out one more time. And when it does, the United States, I believe, has a 15-degree Sagittarius ascendant. And right now, Saturn is at around, I think, 9 or 10. So it's 10. It goes back to 8. But once it comes back out one more time and hits that ascendant, the new chapter for America. And who knows what that chapter is going to look like. So the answer to your question, Randy, is absolutely yes. We are at a crossroads astrologically. It is all happening in the 12th house. That's the last house of the chart. We've got Mars there. We've got Saturn there. Two major players. And we're determining the future of this country.
So I agree. I like what you just said about the whole 9/11 thing. It's really weird. Something that's been coming up for me, and I tend to trust certain markers I see along the way from intuition, but I always see constantly the 11/11 sign, you know, on the clock, on whatever. Lately, I've been seeing the 9/11 all the time, which to me was the sign that it's coming, it's coming. And, you know, there's something I heard you speak about a few weeks ago that I actually haven't heard anyone else mention, and that's that after this thing happened in Orlando with Omar Martin, this guy was arrested in Santa Monica. Everybody knows that. But the part that I had not heard, except for anyone from you and still haven't, was that he spilled the beans and said there was like a whole plot that they were supposed to happen simultaneously. And it was going to be like the big gay 9/11. You want to tell people what you heard?
So there are stories that have been floated that this guy, there are two sort of, how do I say this? I'd say they're slightly conflicting, but you know what comes out of it is the same. One of the stories is that he was driving around Santa Monica and was kind of losing it. Excuse me, and was kind of losing it, and they picked him up. So the other story is that he turned himself in because he heard that this Martin guy got wasted, and he's like, "Whoa, that wasn't supposed to happen. Am I going to get wasted? Am I going to be flack here?" So essentially what he does is he confesses to the Santa Monica PD and that there are going to be these two events happening simultaneously, which makes sense because we're in the month of Gemini. So we're dealing with duality. We're dealing with East Coast, West Coast, and they love duality.
Well, they also love, I mean, on 9/11, we had the Twin Towers and we had the Pentagon. You know, they love it when they can make shit happen everywhere.
Right. You know, and get people running over here, running over there, misdirection. But they love that duality. They love duality, and they love Aquarius, the sign of Aquarius. All those color revolutions that Hillary Clinton was leading—they're all taking place in the month of February, which is the month of Aquarius. Bolshevik Revolution happened when Uranus was in Aquarius, so they love that Aquarian radical energy. I mean, you know, so here we have these two events that were theoretically supposed to be staged. One doesn't happen. We have the event in Orlando. And then apparently the guy got whisked away by the FBI, Santa Monica PD, told to shut their mouth.
Have you heard all this really, this crazy stuff that's coming out, particularly Andrew Napolitano stating on the air the thing about that from what he was reading in the summary of deaths that actually nobody died until 5:13 in the morning?
Yeah, I saw that too.
Watching mm-hmm. entered the building?
Yeah.
What do you think's up with that?
You know, I mean, who knows what went on in Orlando? Yeah. I don't profess to know what happened there, but I'm assuming that, and I'm going to probably take the same tack that Jeff Rentz has taken. I think it's a hybrid event.
Yeah, so do I.
I think some people actually died during this event. Yeah.
I agree.
And I also think there are a lot of crisis actors involved as well.
I think one of the things that well, me and Randy talk about this all the time. It comes up in every show. But people have to get rid of this idea of either or and start to embrace both and. both things are happening, and there's something else that we don't even know, that we haven't even considered yet, that's going on.
Well, they need to change it up constantly. They know that they're being profiled. They know their events are now being deconstructed in real time by bloggers, YouTubers, and investigative researchers. And it's making the mainstream media look bad, and it is also making it very difficult for them to keep this kind of thing up, because you've got millions of eyes on the ground, cell phones everywhere. And quite frankly, they've tried to turn this thing into a surveillance society. And the advent of these little devices means we're a surveillance society. All of a sudden, we flip the tables around on them in these kind of events.
Yeah, it's what James Corbett calls it, surveillance. He says, our response to the surveillance state is to create a surveillance state, which I love that. But yeah, the other thing about this is a lot of people, when these events happen, and I understand why they say this, they go to this nobody died thing. And maybe it's true that nobody died in the event the way it's presented. But I guarantee you, people are dying before it happens and in the aftermath, the ones that won't go along with the program. So, you know, I don't think it's ever right that no one's dying. I think people are dying. It's just not the ones that are having the attention focused on it.
Well, I think that when San Bernardino happened, actually, I think when Charlie Hebdo happened, we saw a break in the model. Because before Charlie Hebdo, when we look at Boston, we look at Sandy Hook, I don't think anybody died there. I don't.
Paris and Belgium, too. I mean, all of those events were a continuum.
Yeah, I think something happened in Charlie Hebdo. I think something happened in that theater, especially on the streets of Paris, because people saw that was outside, and there was actually gunfire going into delis and cafes. And then I think there was probably a really good chance that the model shifted domestically with San Bernardino. And we probably saw, again, a hybrid style event. Although when you look at the hit list of the people that died in San Bernardino, when you really look at those people, they hit almost every single special interest group.
Yeah.
I swear to God.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating when you look into these things, whether we're looking at people who supposedly died or really did die, the connections and the profile that comes up for these people, it's flabbergasting.
Like, I know this sounds really crass, but they got a lot of bang for their buck.
It goes back to even the shooting in Aurora, Colorado, the Batman Theater shooting, and the little girl who died there who was supposedly born on 9/11. You have to wonder how much of the scripting goes. Oh, no, that was actually the shooting of Gabriel Giffords in New Mexico. I mixed the events up.
Arizona.
In Arizona, yeah. Santa Fe, right?
No, it was in Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson. Okay. All right. So we've got all these events now. I mean, most of us who have been doing this for a long time have had an opportunity to profile these in real time. And so there's all these glaring things that stick out, all these little nuances that when you look at them, it feels like central casting is in play.
Absolutely.
And yet I can't help but think there is a synchronistic aspect to some of this, especially when you look at the Batman movie and then you realize that Sandy Hook shows up in the Batman movie. And you just, it's almost like they're creating the next event scripted on the last event.
Yeah.
Paris, the Paris shootings, the Eagles of Death Metal were playing in a club there. The Eagles of Death Metal have a song called San Bernardino Burn.
That's right.
Which is about San Bernardino.
That's right. You
have an overlap between these events, and I don't know that you can make this up. I mean, I've interviewed people. We suspect time manipulation is going on. We suspect that because of the way we're able to process time events, they're actually able to also engineer and reverse engineer things. And all of this mix, there are some very strange things that are built into them that are synchronicities and triggers.
Well, I totally agree. We are living in a time of really bizarre anomalies with time. And I would have no problem with these guys being able to manipulate time, go back and forth, you know, mess around. I mean, how do you explain The Simpsons?
I mean, exactly. Yeah.
You know, I mean, how do they nail this stuff? I mean, consistently.
Are you familiar with Zachary Hubbard? He's an expert in gematria, and he it's fascinating to watch his videos. And he says that they script all of the events by the numbers, that they are using gematria to code the numbers into the language surrounding these events. And it's fascinating the way he predicted the Prince thing. He's able to predict the outcome of sporting events. And it's sometimes it's monotonous to listen to him, because after a while you're like, the only other option, it's either he's right or there's a computer program running. It's simulating the reality. Either way, it's kind of the same thing. It's one's a technological version of it, and one's a more manual version. But you should check his workout. He's pretty interesting.
Let's do a deft segue here if we can, since you brought it up. Since the beginning of January, we have seen the death of a half dozen major rock stars. Now, I'll grant you that some of these guys are pushing the boulder up the mountain. I mean, but none of these guys were what you would call tragically old. So we begin largely in January with David Bowie, then Glenn Frey of the Eagles. We have, and I'm hitting the major ones, the death of Prince. Do you have an astrological or any other type of view on what's going on with, I mean, David Bowie? To me, I've got a whole theory about that, of what David Bowie is doing, because David Bowie was a devotee of Crowley, and I believe that there's soul jumping involved here. I have elaborate themes about these, but I'm interested in what your take is on it, Robert.
Well, the Bowie thing is a really interesting piece for me, because I interviewed him back in 1999. So I spent about an hour with Bowie. It was one of the most interesting experiences of my life. So I had this kind of inside connection with him on a kind of a psychic level. It was very interesting. And I did a radio show on his birthday. So that's the 8th of January. And it was a Friday. It was on my Friday show. And I pulled up his chart and I looked at his chart. And I just kind of went cold, and I said, hey, we better appreciate him while we can. That's what I said on my show.
Wow.
And 2 days later, he was gone. Because I saw it in his chart, and I had people emailing me, saying, you call this, you call that. You know, it's like, I didn't want that kind of notoriety, but I could see it there. Prince, I was not paying attention to, but because it wasn't his birthday, and I wasn't, he wasn't on the radar. But when I looked at his chart, he had a lot going on with his 12th house. That's a common theme when somebody is getting ready to unplug from the mortal coil. And Prince, the whole Prince thing is to me totally, totally fascinating and very dark. And we just saw something very recently with, what's his name? The rapper from Atlanta. One is really messed up. What's his name? Tattoos.
I know you're talking about Lil Wayne.
He was basically in the same part of the sky as Prince, and he had two seizures on his plane, and they had to pull him down.
Yeah.
And he landed. He wouldn't.
Prince was pulled down a few weeks before he died, wasn't he?
Prince, say yes, but just days before. Now, I have a theory. People said that they saw Prince riding around at Walgreens and stuff like that, right? And his bike. I don't know. I really wonder if he was actually alive after that plane event. I have my doubts about that.
Yeah, there were some interesting things going on, not the least of which was the fact that he had just won back his catalog as a result of that longstanding litigation that he had with Warners, which is, I guess, now whatever megalithic company has snapped up all the other record labels, probably Sony at this point. But that was a longstanding battle. And that actually pivots back into Michael Jackson as well. Michael Jackson had gone through the same
thing.
Scenario right before his, we'll say, demise, because for me, the jury's out in a couple of these cases as to whether these people died, had their contracts canceled, or were disappeared as a means to exit stage left. I mean, that's how strange all this stuff really is.
Well, it's certainly with Michael Jackson. I mean, I've seen some interesting video of Michael Jackson after his death. I've seen photos of Tupac Shakur
in
Cuba.
in Cuba. That wouldn't surprise me at all with Tupac, to be honest with you.
So
his father was living in Cuba, right? I mean, that's where his father was.
His stepmother is was a communist, and she was
living. She's dead now.
Yeah.
She just passed away.
But yeah. But I want to ask you something, Robert, because it comes up over and over again for Randy and I. Did you ever watch the TV show Fringe?
I watched a little bit of it, yes.
Okay. So that with particularly with J.J. Abrams that I've been noticing for a while is this really strange interplay, this fusion of reality and fiction. And so a couple of things. First, to the David Bowie thing, there was a character on the first two seasons of Fringe named David Robert Jones. And David Robert Jones was jumping back and forth between, he was jump rooming from place to place, but also going back and forth between universes. And as he was doing this, his skin, his face was beginning to disintegrate. And as it got worse, he was holding it together with a bandage that looked exactly like what David Bowie had on his face in his final video. Okay, and every time you saw the David Robert Jones from the time he started doing this, he looked stranger and stranger. One of the things about David Bowie is he always looked strange in different ways, but there was sometimes he looked alien, sometimes he looked feminine, sometimes he just looked dead. He had that strange look about him, and yet I wonder, I think it's really possible that, and this sounds crazy, that David Bowie's a time traveler and that he's been going back and forth to the future and back again, and that he actually is the man that sold the world.
You know, it's really funny that you bring that up. it's an interesting concept. I mean, I think to understand Bowie, you need to look at The Man Who Fell to Earth, the movie The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I think that really is, that is Bowie. I mean, and plus the fact that if you know anything about his family is really strange.
Yeah. Like
his brother wound up in a mental institution committing suicide. But there was always this chatter about the Bowie family, you know, that there were weird things going on at the Bowie house, you know, whether it was black magic or whether it was some kind of ritual thing going on. There was this kind of, you know, dark aura that was cast over their place. I think it's quite possible that Bowie could be one of these guys that moves in and out of time. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I actually, you know, and I, there, actually Freeman once did a program where he was kind of talking about the possibility that Michael Jackson was doing something like that, you know, and that was what led to the disintegration of his face. You know, he was showing, so I think if I have this right, he was showing images of like some old Egyptian things. He did this kind of thing with Obama too, but there's one particular face that looks almost exactly like what Michael Jackson looked like towards the end when he looked super duper strange, almost like an animal.
Yeah. You know,
and it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, that if he was really jumping through, experiencing jump rooms, traveling through time and space, it would explain where he learned how to moonwalk in a totally different way than we think about it. And yeah. I don't know if you ever paid any attention to James Martinez's radio show, but he used to have Bob and Ion on there talking about how when people would see some of these celebrities were dying, they weren't really dying. They were just choosing to go to the other universe. Mm-hmm. And in Fringe, there was this other universe, and they created a doorway that was actually very simple to cross through. And when they would go over to the other universe, it would be really similar to this one, but just some few things were different, like certain celebrities that were dead in one universe were still alive in the other, almost like this Mandela effect that we're experiencing now.
Well, interestingly enough, and we're kind of bumping up against our time for the break here, but interestingly enough, in that Fringe parallel universe, the World Trade Center was still there, which I thought was beyond interesting because it says something about the overlay that we're living in terms of time. Robert, we didn't dust you in this whole conversation, did we, in terms of...
It's great. I love this stuff. When we come back from the break, I have some theories about timelines as they relate to astrology. So we can talk about those if you want to.
Okay, perfect. Great. Okay.
We're going to go to the break, and I have some music for us. This is a track called Astrology by the artist Phase Destruction. And we're also going to put up a little digital art gallery that is a tribute to the sign of Cancer that we're in right now. Enjoy.
Which, by the way, is M's birthday song this week. We'll be back.
We'll be back. We are back, and before we left, we were starting to get into the idea of parallel universes and timeline jumping, so let's pick up there. Robert, what say you?
Well, one of the things that I was really interested in around September 11th is, you know, what was the significance of that date, other than the fact that you were dealing with the number 11, the Twin Towers, and information, emergency, right? I mean, this is, you know, so I wanted to kind of go back in time and see kind of, you know, what it was all about and what they were trying to do with what I think was a magical, dark, magical, occult event which was about anchoring a specific timeline. So in order to understand September 11th, we have to go back to November 22nd in 1963, which is the death of John F. Kennedy. And Kennedy gets killed. I mean, there are some people that say that Kennedy never died. And even if he didn't die, he symbolically died. It took us out of a timeline, right? We were headed in a certain direction with Kennedy. And we were headed probably outside, out of Vietnam. You know, he had these ideas about grabbing the silver and putting the United States on its own kind of, you know, not just the money, not just the silver, you know, silver coins, which, by the way, he had the executive order. I think it was the executive order 1122, where he basically takes silver out of circulation. Well, there was a reason for that, because he was working with the Hunt brothers and John Connolly, and they were going to create an entirely new currency completely based on silver, and it was going to be based in the state of Texas. So Kennedy had this whole backdoor plan to reclaim the economic sovereignty from the bankers. The bankers helped him get elected. You know, Joe Kennedy went to Meyer Lansky, and he also went to Sam Giancana, who were the two main members of the, you know, quote-unquote, rival gangs, who were really just one gang. But Giancana ran the Italian circuit. And Meyer Lansky, I believe, was on top of Giancana and ran the entire thing. And so he went to them both. And Meyer Lansky said, okay, we'll help you get, because the old man Kennedy knew them both. He was basically a speakeasy owner in Boston, and he knew all these guys. He knew Aristotle Onassis. You know, he knew them through the Seagrams, you know, the Seagrams characters.
Well, the Kennedy family owned the import rights to Scotch whiskey. That's actually part of what their wealth was. During Prohibition,
that's right,
Joe Kennedy kept the channels open. He worked with the Bronfman family in Canada.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So he knew all the people inside the crime syndicate. So when it came time to get his son elected, he tapped him on the shoulder and they said, okay. Now, one of the things that they said, Meyer Lansky says, hey, you know, yeah, we'll help your son get elected. But he's basically got to let Israel do its thing. And when JFK got elected, he was not into recognizing Israel. In fact, he was very he had a lot of antipathy towards Israel. And then Bobby Kennedy went after the mafia. So they were basically marked men. But that's kind of a bit of the side narrative. But what happens in Dallas, it's on 1122, which is 33, a master number, right? Mm-hmm. And Saturn at that time was in the sign of Aquarius. So here we have the beginning of what I would call the dark Aquarian or the false Aquarian age. And then right after that, we have Johnson, the Great Society, and, you know, the birth of socialism, FDR too. Now, what's interesting is that the rumor is that George Bush is there in Dallas during the assassination as part of the CIA. What is George Bush? He's a Gemini. Who is John F. Kennedy? He's a Gemini. So here is where Gemini and duality show up again. And we're running with Gemini with two parallel tracks or two timelines. So what happens on 11-22-63, we jump tracks. And now we're headed down a different track.
We're on the Bush track instead of on the Kennedy track.
We're on the Bush track. And we have MK Ultra, we have the 1960s, they're hijacked, you know, we have mind control, LSD, with a very important astrological cycle, the Uranus-Pluto conjunction in Virgo, is very, very powerful, you know, from roughly 1965 to 1969, it's an extremely powerful conjunction, and I believe that was kind of hijacked along the way. So then what happens is we're going along, and it's feeling as if we are moving further away from that timeline. And we're coming into something different. Maybe we're headed back. We're sort of veering off one more time. It's maybe the pre-Kennedy timeline. And then what happens is on 9/11/2001, they have this event, the Twin Towers, again, Gemini. The moon was in Gemini. Saturn was in Gemini. So we're bifurcating time one more time. So I went and I looked at 9/11. What is important about this day? And I got into some passages in the Bible, and it seems to me, and I'm not the only one, it seems to me that Jesus, or Sananda, Yeshua, whatever you want to call him, as a historical figure, if you don't believe in him, I don't have a problem with that, but as a historical figure, was not born on the 20th.
No, absolutely not. I've done the research, no.
I believe he was born on September 11th.
Yeah, I do too.
So this yes. this is why it's such a big day. This is the inside joke. This is the desecration that takes place. And I thought about this, like, well, isn't this interesting? So I went back in history, and I looked at certain events that took place on 9/11. And some of these events will absolutely blow your mind. And one of the most interesting events is that in 1609, Henry Hudson discovers Manhattan Island on 9/11.
Wow.
Whoa.
This is when New York was by the white man on 9/11. And these events just begin to kind of, you know, stagger. And, you know, you have the anti-Masonic party, which is founded on 9/11 in 1830.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you've got pardon my language, an absolute shitload of nuclear explosions that happened on 9/11. Almost like they're triggered, serious triggers, right? Then you've got, in 1941, Charles Lindbergh delivering a speech. It's called the Des Moines speech. And he's basically outing the British and Roosevelt being in cahoots with the Zionists on 9/11, right? It's a big speech. You got Lindbergh in trouble, to be honest with you. So that's another kind of, you know, major 9/11 events. What else has happened here? Let's see. We've got the Korean War, 1950, 9/11. Harry S. Truman approved military operations north of the 38th parallel. We also have some major, here we go, 1921, Nahalal, the first Moshev in Palestine is settled as part of the Zionist plan to colonize Palestine. It's on 9/11.
Yeah.
There's a settlement. And I mean, all these things just pop up with 9/11 again and again and again. George Simmons performs the first remote operation of a computer. Right, wow. Here we go.
Wow.
1940.
Huh. Yeah.
The Pentagon, check this out.
The Pentagon. Okay.
For the construction of the Pentagon,
yes.
On 9/11, yes. 1941.
Yes, yes. That one I knew.
So 1941, so the thing about the Pentagon happened on the exact same day that the Charles Lindbergh thing happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right here, same day.
That's right.
Now, wow. We agree that 9/11 was the pivotal historical event of this current era. There's no doubt about it. It's the biggest show they've put off. I mean, up until that point, you had Pearl Harbor, the burning of the Reichstag in the modern era. But it was pivotal. It shifted everything, all the nations of the earth. On 9/11, I looked at Revelation 9/11, and what it said, and I know, okay, creepy prophecy kind of stuff, but this is what I did before I did this show. It says, and they had a king over him, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. Now, that's creepy.
It is creepy.
And when you look at that, and you look at the events that are going, first off, we've got a pit. In Manhattan, where that tower stood, and that pit and that pile of rubble inside that pit is by natural physics unexplainable. We had a supernatural event that day, or certainly science that comes damn close to being supernatural in terms of how we understand it.
I would agree. I mean, you know, there are people who believe that there was thermite in the buildings, probably, that there were, you know, small nukes. That's quite likely. I mean, the death toll of people post 9/11 is pretty significant.
Directed energy weapons too. Yeah.
And you're dealing with kind of the occult, operation of the entire thing. So I think there's a convergence. I think what you're talking about, Randy, is the convergence of sort of technologies, the dark spiritual technology.
And
the modern, technology destruction.
Yeah, right? Joseph Farrell has a new book out that he sort of postulates what he thinks is going on, and he thinks of it as a hybrid event where we're looking at, there was thermite, there were nukes, there were directed energy weapons, and then there's this occult magic show. And the whole thing has a huge fascist undertone to it. It's like an occult fascist kind of influence over the whole thing.
I'm noting, by the way, for the audience out there, how many times the word hybrid comes up tonight. It will come up in this show again in a couple of weeks. So just so you know.
are we going to talk about hybrid beings?
Well, we can go there. Sure. Absolutely.
Coming chimeras.
Hybrid. Yep.
They're on their way.
Yes, they are.
And it's going to be, we are going to be living in sort of this reanimation of Atlantis.
Yeah.
We're gonna have Pluto in Aquarius after 2024. And that, we're gonna be living in very strange times. Really strange times.
Do we get that far down the road? I mean, I know that this is long range projection and that it's very difficult to map things. But when you look out that far into the future, it feels to me right now like whatever turn we take right now is so critical, and it looks so dark, and it doesn't look like we have a lot of great choices, and yet at the same time there's a shift going on in consciousness. And I guess what I'm asking you is, are you looking that far down the road? Is it possible to be able to discern, I will say, the probable futures that could occur? Is that where we're at?
I think so. And I don't think it's written in stone.
No, I don't either.
I really don't. And because when I look at, there are two major, again, let's go to the outer planets. Let's go to Pluto and Capricorn and Uranus and Aries. And the reason why these planets are so important is that Pluto was in Capricorn at the time of the American Revolution. Okay. Uranus was in Aries. Just before Uranus was in Aries at the rise of the Third Reich. So these are two really, they haven't existed before simultaneously, the relationship of these two outer planets.
Yeah.
If you look at what happened roughly from 1926 to 1933, which is when Uranus was in Aries, All the great inventions of the 20th century were invented during that time. The computer, television, radio, complex plastics. I could go on and on and on and on. They're all happening during that time. And then they get put into mass production when Uranus goes into Taurus just after the Second World War. We're experiencing the same thing, but what's happening technologically is light years ahead. I mean, this stuff is dark and it's been underground for a long time, but now it's bubbling up, right? And the private corporations are getting their hands on AI, gene mapping, and it's all happening during this Uranus and Aries phase. Well, that's great on one level, or maybe not so great on one level. on the other hand, there's like this personal revolution going on with 3D printing and maker culture, and this is where humanity really stands a chance. Right, because when we look at what's happened with something like recording, right? You go back in the recording industry, you'd have to have a recording contract, you'd have to go to a studio, you had to take that thing, you get an acetate, press, and then you had to have mass production.
Yes.
Right? All that's gone. It's all, if I wanted to, I could make a record in this right now.
We're sitting here working, all three of us are sitting here working on MacBook computers that have inside of them everything we need to sit down. We can hook up a MIDI instrument. We can multi-track. We can overdub. I was a kid that played with tape recorders. I was in the era of analog tape where when I finally got a TIAC, really, real four-track, and then it was able to do sound on sound, sound with sound. That was like being the frickin' Beatles at that point, just in terms of being able to do that. Now, with Pro Tools, you've got infinite number of tracks, infinite number of instruments, and the ability to even, well, let's just face it, sadly, auto-tune your ass if you need to. So,
right.
There we are.
And Randy, this has happened across the board, right?
Audio,
video, film. Remember dropping your film off at Walgreens? We don't do the final stage of this is manufacturing. And this is where the 3D printer comes into play. This is the final frontier so that we can really create what we need and become more self-sufficient and more sovereign. This is the final frontier. So we've got these two models of reality that are competing. One is the overarching kind of plutocratic, you know, megalithic corporate structure. And then there's kind of like this DIY track that is starting to pick up steam. And the technology is there, beginning to get there to support it.
Now, this,
to your point, it's not written in stone.
So are we talking about there with the energies and where we are right now? There's one path, which is clones, AI, GMO foods, all that stuff. And then there's another path with creative people making the future they want, building stuff themselves, and truly creating their own reality, not just imagining it, but creating their own reality. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And here's another little wrinkle. I was watching this interview with Elon Musk the other day. Pretty brilliant. I like Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. And he was talking very cryptically about how there was going to be, in essence, kind of this externalized dark web that we would have to deal with. And his solution was to have our own kind of organic neural interface that would allow us to sort of counteract whatever was happening from the dominant paradigm. And he was dead serious about this. I mean, he was basically saying, look, if we don't upgrade in our own way, then we're going to be at the mercy of what
the evolve mantra. Or die is basically the mantra that's coming through.
Yep.
That's interesting. Go ahead, Randy.
Okay. That was the point. The point is that's kind of written out there right now. We're not going to turn this thing around. We can't go back. The page has already been turned here. There's two key elements, and maybe in this nugget here we can address it, because the two elements in empowering the kind of technology that we would take this to, we require two things right now in my mind. One is personal digital currency. Bitcoin, a good start. And secondly, we need something like low energy nuclear reaction. We need cold fusion. We need energy that's no longer tied into a grid and meters.
And you know, that's funny. When James Martinez used to talk about both of those things at the same time, he would also talk about the 3D printing.
Yeah.
And those are the things that are required for us to have the evolution that we want to have.
See, I'm actually working right now with computer-aided design and manufacturing tied to small box printers and small box milling systems. That's part of what I do. The programming behind it is now so sophisticated we can begin to create things in virtual space and turn them into real-world objects within minutes.
Wow.
So we're there.
Wow.
Awful
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, no, it was interesting when you were saying about Elon Musk, and maybe you can send me a link to that presentation. I'd like to see that. But I like what he was saying about an organic sort of neural network. And one of the things that I've been noticing for me, as I really have been coming into alignment with who I want to be, is my sort of extrasensory and psychic abilities and intuitive abilities have really raised. And I'm having this experience sometimes at work, where I'll ask the customer their name, and in the instant before they say it, I know exactly what they're going to say. I've also been practicing on trying to read people's energetic signatures, and I think maybe some of this is what he's talking about, because this problem
This is kind of the Sense 8 thing that you and I, this goes back to where you and I began having the conversation that led to doing the show.
I think it's going to be, we're going to have to learn, because it's going to be almost impossible to tell the difference between them on first look. We're going to have to learn to use higher abilities to sense what is real and what is not real, and who is a human and who is not a human, and things like this.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. I was at a sandwich shop kind of out in the country here, not far from my house. And there was a young woman behind the counter, and I looked at her and was like, she's really attractive, and not from a place that I was like, oh, I'd really like to, you know, connect with this woman. But I was just noticing that she had that perfectly symmetrical face. And I said to her, I said, have you ever modeled, or has anybody ever told you you could model? And she said, well, you know what's really interesting is that I was in the industry. I was a model. So we talked about this, and I said, well, why did you leave? She says, well, because it's really fucked up, right? And then my son was there, and he didn't really talk a lot about it. We sort of talked around it. And then he took the sandwich and left. He says, I'll tell you something. And this is a girl who was at Fashion Week in New York City. You know, she's been there. He said, you know, in these big fashion shows like Fashion Week, not all the models you see are real. He says some of them are robots.
Yeah, which actually takes us to one of the things Randy and I have been talking a lot about lately. It comes up over and over, is clones and cloning. And you did a really interesting work on Tiger Woods. And, you know, it's always been clear to me from looking at him that he's a victim of MKUltra. He's really fucked up, blah, blah, blah. But I had not really thought about that. The Tiger Woods that we're looking at now isn't Tiger Woods. It's a replica. I had not thought about that until you said that. And you pointed to some really important things that Tiger Woods symbolizes in our culture. And why don't you tell people a little bit about that?
So Tiger Woods is a really interesting story. His father, Earl Woods, he had a double master's degree in psychology and some related study. But Earl Woods wasn't your average cookie. And Tiger, I believe, was an experiment. And that Earl Woods probably was his father, probably was his biological father. And of course, his mother was, she was from Asia. I believe she was Indonesian. And Woods called himself the Kabbalan Asian, which was, you know, a combination of black and Asian and Caucasian. Kabbalan Asian, because I believe Earl was mixed. So here comes little Tiger. Earl's living on the West Coast. Tiger's living on the West Coast. And he's in and around San Francisco. And this is kind of around the same time that Michael Aquino is involved with the United States government, psychotronic warfare, MK Ultra, Temple of Set, all that stuff. It's right around that same time. And Tiger Woods is showing up on like the Mike Douglas show and hitting golf balls. And he's on the Mike Douglas show with Bob Hope.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, Bob Hope was like his
handler,
totally.
Oh, that's really not good. Oh.
So the fingerprints are all over young Tiger Woods, right? So he grows up, you know, he's this golf prodigy. He goes to Stanford. He comes out and he just starts slaying everybody. And my theory is that Tiger Woods was put into place so that people would accept Barack Obama as president, because they're so close in terms of their stature, in terms of their skin tone. They both look slightly, you know, sort of slightly Asian in their own way. So here comes Tiger Woods. He completely crushes, you know, all of his rivals. David Duval has a nervous breakdown. They may have psychotronically, you know, screwed with David Duval. I don't know. The same afterwards. And so Tiger's got all these corporate sponsors, you know, and now all of a sudden, you know, we have this African-American who's slightly mixed, who's been accepted by not only corporate America, but by the elites.
And by the whitest sport in the world.
The whitest sport in the world. And then on his heels, here comes Barack Obama. Now, it doesn't take long for Tiger Woods' life and career to fall off the rails after Obama's elected. The first thing that happens is his father dies. You know, once his father dies, there goes his handler. He starts coming off the rails. He starts taking, the Ambien, and having, you know, crazy sex with cocktail waitresses from Vegas. And then his game begins to degrade. And there's that fatal night that happens on right around Thanksgiving where Elaine goes nuts.
So you're saying she thinks she killed him.
I believe she smashes cranium.
I think you're right.
If you look at it, you know, they've cleaned this up now. But anytime you have an event like this, it's like the first 3 hours.
Yeah.
You've got really good at staging it now, so you don't get the random cracks in reality. But if you go back and look at what happened during that time, there's a lot of really strange things that take place. His admittance to the hospital, the call to 911, the neighbor that describes it, he's not moving. Then Elaine's mother, who's there on vacation, has a freaking nervous breakdown and has to be admitted to a hospital. Okay. Then we don't see Tiger for months. I mean, for months. People say, well, he's healing, whatever. And then when we finally see him, the guy's a robot. He has no emotion. I'm like, who is this? Who is this dude? This is not Tiger Woods.
And he doesn't have his game back either. He sucks.
Yeah, he's
not the same golfer at all if you watch his form.
He's a clone.
I'm not familiar with his game, but I know because I watch a lot of gymnastics and tennis that the organic person has a lot of certain mannerisms and very tiny gestures and things like that. And I would absolutely know it if that was changed. And so maybe if any of you of our listeners out there are golfing fans, maybe you can fill us in on if any of these are present in what we are saying now is possibly likely a clone. You said that. It really resonated with me. I've been thinking a lot about mind control in athletes, cloning with athletes. Me and Randy were talking about, I think during the Olympics, we'd like to do a special on those things, athletes and MKUltra and cloning. I think you're dead on with that. I think you're totally on to something. You know, I have some of my theories about some of the athletes, different things that we've talked about. I think there's a lot there that symbolizes what's going on the bigger picture. That's one of my favorite things you do, Robert.
I'm sorry, cut off, Emily.
Just so the listeners know, one of the things that I love about Robert is he's a sports fan and he sort of looks at what's going on in the world through that lens and ties it all together. And it's a really cool way, especially for people who aren't necessarily interested in sports, to develop an interest in it and be able to use it as almost a measuring tool for what's going on.
Well, let's look at the NBA Finals.
Go for that. This is great.
So here we have the NBA Finals and you have Golden State, who is blowing the doors off of Cleveland. I mean, the two teams are not even in the same gym. And then what happens is that the league gets involved and they remove one of the Warriors' key players for one game. And it just so happens that their center also injures himself and hyperextends his knee during that game. Now, there are two key figures in this series. One is Stephen Curry, and the other is LeBron James. And astrologically, they couldn't be more different. Stephen Curry is what sign? He's a Pisces. And who do we associate with Pisces? That guy that's born on 9/11, right? And they're the baby Pisces. And Stephen Curry is a Christian. So here we have Stephen Curry, the Christian. And then we have LeBron James.
What's the cultist?
LeBron James is a Capricorn, born on, guess what, same day as Tiger Woods, okay? So LeBron James is the Capricorn. And what is Capricorn? Capricorn is Baphomet.
No!
Yeah. So you got Baphomet and Jesus in the finals.
Nice. Okay? Nice.
Now they remove Draymond Green from one game. Andrew Bogut gets hurt. And the refs let the Cleveland Cavaliers do whatever they want. Whatever they want. It was kind of like being at a Black Lives Matter rally. Nobody's getting involved, right?
The whole thing boiled down into a coronation of LeBron James as king, right? Black Lives Matter tears up the joint and LeBron James pops up as king, right?
Well, yeah, and you have this classic Baphomet you know, Jesus thing going on between these two guys. And by the end of the series, Stephen Curry was so beat up. He's going to have shoulder surgery, he's going to have knee surgery. I mean, he was just a shadow.
He'll never be the same.
Because the Cavaliers were just, in fact, the entire playoffs league was beating him senseless. I've never seen, by the way, I've never seen this before, a two-time MVP foul outs in a playoff game, in a finals play, never seen it. And they did that to Curry. They kicked him out of the game with about 3.5 minutes left. And it's clear to me that the league did not want Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors to win that game. They wanted to celebrate the game off of that.
Yeah.
Right? That's my take on that. And by the way, have you ever looked at Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA?
No.
He looks like the son of Nosferatu. One of the most bizarre looking characters. Yeah, you ever see that movie Dark City? Came out right around the same time as The Matrix. You ever see that?
No.
It's a really good movie. Alex Proyas. I highly recommend it. Anyway, there's this group of characters that are inside this planet that are completely changing reality all the time. He looks like one of those guys too.
Oh, that sounds about right though.
Yeah. So totally scripted. You know, King Baphomet's, right?
So now that we've gotten to Baphomet and Black Lives Matter, why don't the last thing we do before we leave, why don't you give us your forecast for election night, Robert?
Ooh, that's big. That is a biggie. So go back where we started. We started with the anoretic degree. We talked about this in terms of Trump's chart at the 29th degree of Leo. On that day, election day, Mars is at 29 degrees Capricorn. It starts off at the anaretic degree. So we're dealing with Pluto, we're dealing with Capricorn, we're dealing with the plutocracy, we're dealing with hierarchies. It's Mars, it's activated, man. It is on, but it's at that 29th degree. And during election night, Mars moves into Aquarius at 0 degrees. So when we get into Mars Aquarius, what is the energy of Mars in Aquarius? That's radical. That's revolutionary. So this could go two different ways. We're either going to experience a new American revolution, and there's going to be riots as a result of this. That would be a Trump election, by the way. Or we're going to experience the riots anyway, and we might be looking at an extended phase here where there is no declared winner because the results are too close. So we might get into another situation that's going to be very much like what happened in Florida.
Yeah.
At the
in 2000. Yeah.
Right. And so it's going to prolong and prolong and prolong. Yeah. Meanwhile, the fires that are going to be burning, and they're going to start burning before then, by the way.
Oh, yeah. We're going into this now. We are going into this with these conventions. This one I was calling, I said, this is going to be the summer that's going to make the summer of 68 when we had the riots in Chicago look like a Girl Scout picnic.
But see, yeah, that was a weenie roast compared to what we're...
No,
totally. And I would say, you know, even look at 4th of July, you know, because of the flag and all the things that are associated with America, and you know Trump will be out there. He's got three planets in Cancer. You know, we're in the season of Cancer. You know, look for the desecration of the flag. Look for flag burnings. It's going to burn right into people's minds that, you know, how can these people do this, right? How can these people do this? And that's going to set it off. 4th of July is going to set off this sequence of events and these two conventions, particularly the Republican convention. And where is that convention happening?
Cleveland.
Yeah.
What do you think about this hacking of the Twitter and email accounts of the guy who's the leader of Black Lives Matter, where he's supposedly talking to someone and saying how they're their task is to create as much chaos as they can so that they can, you know, have martial law and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Have you heard about this? What do you think?
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that, the bit of chatter, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, because really, I mean, all these groups, you know, which are connected to George Soros, with Open Society and the Tides Foundation and all that stuff.
Of course, he gave $33 million to Black Lives Matter. Of course, 33.
Gotta be 33, right? I mean, they're all front companies for the Communist Party.
Yeah. I mean,
the Communist Party just got very sophisticated.
Yeah.
And created these, you know, these public action groups.
Yeah.
You know, I would say that there's probably some truth around that. I mean, what's Obama going to do after he's not in office anymore? You know, I mean, he may be.
Can we assume at this point that he's not going to be in office? Well,
this is what we're talking about here.
Yeah. I mean, you think he's going to leave office?
I'm seeing a guy that's really engaged in politicking and being a president. And right around now, most of these guys, you know, they're checking their watch.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're figuring out, you know, who they're going to pardon and where they're going to spend the next 20 years of their life. He's not doing that.
He actually seems more engaged now than he was for the bulk of his.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And by the way, I mean, maybe not all that effective in his engagement. Let's put it that way.
Right, but engaged nonetheless.
Engaged nonetheless. I mean, where are these people going to go? You know, where is Susan Rice and Valerie Jarrett? Where are they going to go?
I got some suggestions, but
yeah, no, away from me. I don't know.
But you know, they've worked. Bill Ayers has worked for years to get to this point.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're not just going to give it up that quickly. Yeah.
Look, I think Trump is really smart. I think he's really smart. And I think something's going to happen to Hillary before this election. That's my sense.
Yeah. And what's leaking out right now with the Clinton Foundation is probably where it's going to come from. I don't see an indictment coming from the FBI, the Justice Department, in terms of any of the things tenoring there. But the Clinton Foundation right now is hemorrhaging. And looks to me like that is the place where they can take Hillary down effectively.
Well, tomorrow the book that the Secret Service guy is publishing comes out.
Right.
And we'll see how bulletproof Hillary is. This is going to be a good test for her.
Yeah. All right. So, Robert, before we leave, would you please tell everybody your website, how they can get in touch with you? What, you know, hit it.
RobertPhoenix.com. You can find me there. You could go to Gaia TV, where I have 23 shows that Emily mentioned at the beginning of this broadcast. And my radio show on Blog Talk Radio, but it all starts with RobertPhoenix.com.
So this has been really great. Hopefully you'll come back and do this again with us sometime. I really appreciate it, Robert.
Love it. It's been great.
Maybe we get you back before the election and see if we can kind of tighten up the scenario at that point. And there's going to be some interesting things between now and November that I think are going to play into the dynamics of the election. So we invite you back, man. This was awesome. Awesome.
Okay.
My pleasure.
And before we go, I just want to leave the track we're going to leave you with is called Time to Find Yourself by the artist Trip Acoustic. And in the description box below, there'll be a link to a DJ mix, they're actually live artists. My friends Vidal and Vangelis Vargas, they go by Rais. They're from Droid Behavior in Los Angeles, California. Check them out. They're awesome. Maybe we'll have them on the show someday. And we'll see you again real soon, guys. Thank you.
We'll see you. We'll be back again very soon. By the way, don't forget to support free and independent media. And you can find us at offplanetradio.com, and we are airing live on Conscious Consumer Network. I'm Randy Moggins with Emily Moyer for Off Planet Radio. Truth is out there. It's inside you. Now go find your piece of it. Namaste.
Yeah. All right.